Welcome to the McCovey Croncast. I'm Brian Murphy.
I'm Doug Brazzoni.
Joining us this week is from Baseball Prospectus and all over the internet and Twitter, Jason Wojciechowski. Jason, you have assured me that I'm within the margin of error for that pronunciation. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I lied to you. You're well outside the margin of error, but I decided to wait
until
morning to tell you that.
Trolling Brian is always a good idea.
I gotta go, guys. Enjoy the show. Have fun. Well, welcome again. Jason is he's been a Giants fan since he was 2 years old. He knows the team backwards and forwards. Editing Baseball Prospectus. Who wrote the Giants section this year? Because I know that you, it was a conflict of interest for you. Too big of a fan, you said.
That's an extremely good question. That is a very good question that I'm stalling while the internet. Dan Rathman wrote the comments section. I have no idea who wrote the essay. Did you write the essay, Brian?
I did not.
No. That was Eric not Malinowski. I forgot. It was Eric Malinowski did the essay. Daniel Rathman of Baseball Prospectus did the comments.
And son of 49ers legend Tom Rathman? I don't know. I'm just guessing. It's not a common last name.
No, I've never asked him. I would like to say I've wondered, but now I'm wondering.
Well, now it's out there.
It is
so
out there.
Someone will get back to us, I'm sure.
He hasn't denied it.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, Eric Malinowski, the best person on Twitter because of the number one rule of Twitter, don't tweet. If you didn't know what the number one rule of Twitter was, those who are listening, it's don't tweet. But yeah, great. Great. How long have you been editing the annual?
This was my third year.
And you you got this job because you won a poker game or you lost a poker game?
Because Sam Miller lost a poker game.
I see.
Yeah.
I always pictured Sam Miller as being way more into Russian roulette, but...
Yeah, well, he didn't lose it to me. I was kind of an innocent bystander, essentially, in the bets going around at the game. But just to clarify that part of the record...
So when you're putting together these annuals, you're looking at statistics, something's come up recently. I think it's all kind of on Twitter yesterday and today was sort of this idea of tanking and how you're using statistics. Being a Giants fan for so long, now I'm talking about myself. And probably, Doug, you can probably relate to this too, the idea of advanced statistics and the Giants going together, I mean, they went together like cookies and ass. They just didn't really match up, seemingly. But the Giants have now, they project well even, and they put together decent teams. When you're just a fan and you're looking at these things and you see something for like, a team I know that you don't really like too much, the A's, you see them and you see they're doing whatever, you just look at the numbers and – I guess I'm trying to get at if you're not statistically minded or bad with numbers like I am, how do you sort of take that because you're interested in all information you can possibly get, kind of merge that with your excitement for watching new baseball if you know it's going to be bad or just maybe not as good as you hoped?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a question I've been thinking about a little bit lately in terms of maybe we've – whether we've been getting too caught up in the metagame and in this sort of question of, team building and, following the trades and following the signings and blah, 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 and whether that's actually fun, whether it might even be more fun just thinking about baseball, even if it's a bad team. So I don't know. I would like to say that I can look at the A's projections. Precota says they'll be in last place in AL West, and say, well, every year some last place team, manages to be a first place team. But I definitely don't do that. Being completely honest, that's not a thing I do. In fact, when the A's are projected to be in first place, I totally, I absolutely do tell myself, well, every year some first place team is a last place team, so that's going to be the A's. So I think I just, you know, I think, and I think I maybe do this overall too, these days more and more. I'm more kind of interested in the aesthetics. I'm more interested in like the weirdness. I'm more like, I would almost call it like invoking Cespedes Family Barbecue, and that whole sort of mode of being a baseball fan with just like the weirdness and the funny names and like pig roasts and all of that stuff is maybe more interesting, whether it's a good team or a bad team. To me these days. And so I feel like it's a good sort of Zen way to be a fan. Maybe there's no good way to be a fan, but you know what I mean?
Sure. Well, there's certainly plenty of bad ways to be a fan.
There are bad ways to be a fan. Most of them involve telling other people how to be a fan. So, right. Yeah.
The rest of them involve being a fan the way Brian is a fan.
Oh, sorry. What was that, Doug?
I was saying the rest of the bad ways to be a fan are the way you're a fan, Brian.
That's right. I've got the rest covered, yeah, pretty much. But I'm very much of that mindset of if my team is favored or thought to be good, then I'm automatically hiding under something because that just doesn't make sense to me. So, and I don't know why, but that's just – it just seems like I don't want to jinx it, which is completely irrational. But to get back to the information idea, I mean, that's what's been so great is this boom and it's accessible to everybody. But another part of like additional information we've become aware of or received in the last 5 years has been social media. So to your point about the weirdness and sort of the kooky names and characters and incidents, there's additional coverage just for that stuff. And it's almost real time. Too, whereas in the past we might have had to read it in someone's autobiography or maybe in some sort of like off-season article about, oh yeah, and then earlier in the season, you know, by the way, back in June, the reason why Stan Stubby wasn't in the lineup was because he was a chronic masturbator and he sprung his wrist. We would have found that out right away these days if that were to happen.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Tony Phillips's recent death, sadly, was an interesting illustration. There were all these, you know, stories of these great Tony Phillips quotes and, you know, and they were decades ago, years ago, that, you know, every other word out of his mouth. Do you guys put an explicit tag on this?
We can, or I'll put a funny sound effect over it, so it's fine.
Okay. I mean, every other word out of his mouth was and you know, various beat writers described him as one of the game's most eloquent users of profanity. So you know, I think those things. You know, there's still a lot of things I think aren't getting reported, and you know, reporters are kind of covering for players. But I think there's an appreciation of that type of thing more now. I mean, we all saw the cars or the car that Cespedes drove to spring training and Freddie Freeman's cat, right? That's a big one.
Right.
So yeah. Or maybe more close to home last year, Matt Duffy's cat, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. And it's fun. That's the other part of that is that information is fun. And I think learning of, you know, projection systems are just – they're fun in their own way too, and not to everybody. Some people don't like cats or aren't interested in – drugged cats going on road trips with players as much, but they enjoy whatever. So that the diversity of information is certainly beneficial. But again, that's where I get nervous. This diversity of information for the Giants this year has been basically wall-to-wall positive. I just don't know what to do with that. And Doug is just, you know, he's just like, oh, Brian, you fool, enjoy it. And it's very hard to. All right, awkward silence, which I wanted.
Well, I was, you know, enjoying it. I don't know. It's 2016. Who enjoys things anymore? I just don't think that
we do live in a post-joy society. It's true.
It is. It's a, you know, and for good reason. It's not an irrational post-joy society. It's a, you know, we're all screwed and we're all going to die post-joy society.
You watched the X-Files revival, of course, right?
It's less that we're all going to die than that we're going to be, you know, Chris Carter is going to make us miserable before we get there.
That's right.
But because we have to watch the last episode.
Exactly. So, if Chris Carter could write our final day on Earth, how terrible would everyone's deaths be?
I think the after answers that, right? I just revealed that I watched the after. I'm sorry.
That's true.
That was that this is bad for everybody's brand.
That's right. My favorite part of that finale, my favorite worst part out of many, was when Agent Dana Scully of the FBI is running through Washington, D.C., with a bag of a cure, and she stops for a moment. It's urgent. This cure, people are dying. It's irreversible unless someone gets this medicine. But she has time to stop a random guy from looting. And then she negotiates with the crowd and tells everyone to be cool before she heads off. And I just thought, wow, that is out of character. It's a ridiculous scene given the stakes, and it was also poorly shot and very generic. That will be all of our deaths.
And it had nothing to do with what was going on.
Nothing.
It could have not happened.
So disappointments, obviously, are they're always surprising, because don't we all hold out, now bring it back to baseball, don't we all always hold out hope? I mean, to talk to the A's. And again, if you don't know, Jason's actually, he's an A's fan. And there's nothing wrong with that, I feel. I'm going on the record to say there's nothing wrong with that.
I appreciate it here and now.
Yeah.
But I appreciate your approval.
I mean, if the A's, you're holding out hope, just not that it's your first thing, whether you see them as projected to be in first or last, you hold out that little bit of hope that the best case scenario happens either way, right? Even though you're being like, they could be that team that comes in last place, there's still like 2% of you that's like, but maybe. And just like with the last place, there's that 2% that's like, but maybe. Maybe the Mariners will just completely be terrible.
Well, that's beyond a maybe. So this is one of, I guess, the nice things about being an A's fan, and it's, you know, yeah, to bring it actually back to the tanking where we started, is that Billy Beane or the ownership or someone in charge has decided that tanking is not going to be a thing. And so even in the bad seasons, and it's looking like this is going to be a bad season, they have the team, the front office has not given up on this season before the season started. You know, a front office that's giving up doesn't trade for Chris Davis, doesn't trade a prospect for Chris Davis. A front office that's giving up doesn't acquire Jed Lowry. I mean, these aren't like superstars. It's not like they went out and signed Jason Hayward. But they are attempts to make the team better. Second base has been a problem. So get Jed Lowry. He's better than Eric Sogard. Left field was a problem because Coco Crisp is never healthy. So you get Chris Davis. Again, these aren't world-beating moves, but sort of within the context that they're working in, they're improvements. And so you see that and you say, well, you know, if Chris Davis does this and if Jed Lowry does that and if Sonny Gray is still an ace, and you know, maybe if one of the young, you do that chain of ifs, and you know, as long as you're realistic about it, you won't end up disappointed. I'm not going to be disappointed if the A's are a third, fourth, how many teams are there in the division? Third, fourth, or fifth place team, because this is sort of what's expected of them. you know, it does allow me to actually watch the games in April without feeling completely despondent about it.
Speaking of despondent, no, I won't segue everywhere that way. I think there's five teams in the AL West, right? The Angels are still a baseball team, right?
Technically. I always forget, you know, when they moved the Astros, I'm still stuck in, you know, 2007.
That's fine. Many of us are. So the news out of spring training, the Giants get their first injury. Big news. It's Matt Cain has a cyst on his arm, and he had it drained a couple of times, and it didn't take. It gained sentience or something, so they had to surgically remove it. So his timetable for return or for getting his reps in, that's all been pushed. There's a chance he may not be on the roster opening day. Matt Cain, the past 2.5 years, maybe three, it's just been kind of a rough go of things. I know the Giants, we were all counting on him being somebody. And Doug, I mean, I know in terms of depth, Chris Heston is right there. I just wonder, like, this seems like one of those cases where it's like, we didn't bank on Matt Cain getting injured. We just banked on him being bad. And so now maybe it gums up your depth a little bit, and I wonder, or your plans a little bit, and I wonder what that might do to teams in those situations.
Well, the Giants have pretty good depth for that fifth starter spot. You know, one of the kind of sad realities of who Matt Cain is now is that nobody's expecting that much from him. So if he misses a couple starts and Chris Heston takes him or Clayton Blackburn takes him, nobody's going to expect too much from him still. They're going to be able to just step in, and if they pitch, if whoever the replacement is, if he needs a replacement, we don't know that yet. But if he needs a replacement for a couple starts, the Giants will just need someone to pitch adequately. They're not looking for a big star. Nobody really thinks that Matt Cain is going to be, you know, blowing up the Death Star Matt Cain again. He's just going to be a guy who, if he wasn't paid $40 million over the next 2 years, would probably not still be on the roster.
That is a sad point. He's no Kendall Graveman, right, Jason? Just want to bring you back into this conversation.
he might be Kendall Graveman. I don't mean to slander poor Kendall Graveman, but...
He's no Sean Nolan.
Oh, well, yeah, no, that would be going too far on Matt Cain. I think he is no Sean Nolan.
Don't you mean to bury Kendall Graveman? Comedy, sure. High volume business. You just got to keep going. but I tend to think that I agree with you, but I just now just throwing out there for the sake of discussion that there are teams, it's kind of like life. You plan for things not to always work out, but at least for me, I kind of feel like there's a parameters for failure. And so I expect Matt Cain to not do well. I wasn't planning for him to get injured because now it delays my evaluation of my expectation of him not doing well. It just pushes that back. So now it's like gums it up a little bit. And I wonder, you know, the Giants' infield depth is such that if Joe Panic's back really just keeps being a question mark, you know, then the Giants' infield depth is going to be a big sore spot again, and we'll see where it goes. And it's kind of like that's one where they planned for, like, okay, we are definitely screwed if anyone gets hurt here. We know that. But Matt Cain or even any of the starters kind of like, getting hurt in a non, like, blow up an elbow kind of way, which is, I would assume, always the worst case scenario that they kind of have in the back of their minds. That beyond that, it's kind of like, it would have been nice if we had known what we had or had a better sense instead of having to delay that. So, I don't know. I'm just trying to find something to talk about in spring training because it's so damn early. It's like, they're really, like, some people they're not even fully stretched yet. You know, Coco Crisp probably hasn't even used 65% of his body yet in this calendar year.
Well, but he's probably has used 120% of his hair.
Well, he's using 120% of his hair, which now sadly does not cover 100% of the same area it used to. So that is always the sad part about Coco Crisp, was his helmet would fly off, and then it'd be like, no, if the hairline's moved back another inch. That's not cool.
Every triple pushed it back another quarter of an inch.
Yeah. Were there any Giants you actually liked growing up?
I had a Jeffrey Leonard starting lineup figure. He was a Giant for a while, right?
He was.
Yes.
Yeah. I think I got it the World Series year. I think I got it in 89. Well, your World Series year. We had a lot of them. And
congratulations on winning one of those.
I'm trying to think. There was that baseball card. What was it? They were all like portraits and black and white. And then one of the cards was like, it was like Black and Decker. And it was like the battery of Bud Black and Steve Decker. I don't think I ever saw Bud Black pitch, and I certainly never saw Steve Decker. I assume his name is Steve catch. But I liked that card. So I feel like that counts.
All right, so okay. you're a fan of a card, okay?
I think that was my early fandom. Certainly was the cards.
That's
like Kevin Mitchell.
Oh yeah, Kevin Mitchell. That's good. I'm always that's kind of like me being a fan of the BART station going right, dropping you right off in front of the Coliseum. That's my favorite day.
I've never actually taken BART to the. You know, I go to that state. I've gone to that station for the airport. Not my favorite station. In terms of the personalities involved,
it's not a great one. it's got some upside. It drops you right off in front of the stadium. Yeah. So beyond the annual, are you contributing regularly for Baseball Prospectus this year? Because I don't read it all the time.
No, I have not for a number of years, actually. And I don't really have plans to. As I understand it, I'm still sort of welcome to pitch and, you know, whatever. But I have no official column there or anything like that.
Well, that's a shame, because folks, if you haven't read his stuff, if you haven't sat and listened to him, just talk. Jason, you're a very interesting guy.
I definitely see the your eyes glazing over as I talk, Brian.
That's not the case at all. We're usually watching either an A's game or a Dodgers game, so there's other stuff going on in the background that makes me tune out or like whatever. But I think the last game, the A's game that A's and Angels, Kendall Graveman was the starter there, in fact. But you're like insanely busy. I don't know how you do this and you speak in front of the Supreme Court, right? That's your day job. That's your.
Yeah. I don't actually argue cases. Yeah. I just sort of show up and start talking.
That's right.
And eventually, you know, like they get tired of it, but I come back the next day.
And now with Scalia gone, you have more time to talk. So it's going to be, it's your busier now.
Exactly. Yeah. Once he gets replaced, I'll lose like 12% of my time again. But for now it's so much of me.
That's right. But in terms of this, I can ask you about this upcoming labor agreement in terms of what you see, how things might be going. One thing that I've learned over the past year that I didn't know beforehand, because I just assumed everything was fair and that the revenue balance was 50-50 or something close to that. And then the revenue balance is like 60-40 owners. And so, and is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's about what I've read. Yeah, that I think, you know, in the context of comparing it to some of the other sports, of course, it's not as, I don't think we have the numbers quite as well because it's not baked into the agreement the way it is in the NBA and maybe the NFL. So the numbers aren't reported quite as accurately necessarily, but yeah, it's pretty tilted.
So it's just, it's essentially payrolls that we know publicly and kind of like team valuations or industry valuations of annual revenue, something like that. That's how we figured it out.
Yeah, I'm guessing they're sort of best estimates of revenue based on publicly reported TV contracts. Maybe, you know, gate revenue is pretty easy to figure out. But yeah, concessions and various other things, there's a lot of variable, you know, how much are they getting for advertising? Those things are probably a lot more, there's a lot more error involved in figuring that out, guessing those from the outside.
Where do you stand on the qualifying offer?
You know, I don't obviously. So, like the clear purpose of it is to decrease the value of some of the top free agents. So, in that regard, I think it's dumb. You know, that's just sort of like my basic bias. Does it hurt the players? Then it's dumb and bad. But I think even beyond that, I think as you know, you can go kind of bipartisan and look at how weird and distorted it's made the free agent market, and how, you know, we're here in February, the end of February, and teams are in camp and pitchers are catching and catchers are pitching and all sorts of stuff. And now Dexter Fowler is being signed, you know, and 4 days ago, Yovani Gallardo is being signed, and it's just feels, broken, in a way that, even putting aside, you know, even if you want the owners to have all the money, it doesn't feel like normal free agency. It doesn't feel like productive free agency. It just causes all this weirdness that I don't think many fans seem to like, and I don't particularly like it either. Oh, you get the Steven Drew situation. You know, you get the players who stick around until June 1 or whenever they're allowed to sign without penalty, and that, you know, that's just, except in the Roger Clemens situation, that never seems to work for anybody either.
Right, if you're an older player and you're basically like, I'll play half a season. I think more players later in their – now I'm just riffing here. I think more players later in their career should do like a – pull an A-Rod and take like a year off. And I know he didn't – I know pulling an A-Rod is get suspended from baseball. But essentially, like, you know, you're late in your career. Maybe you've had a couple of years that are injury-riddled. Just take a year off. You know, don't – you get hurt in spring training 1 year. Maybe don't come back that year. Just sit it out. It's not like a surgery thing. Just like let your body fully recover and then come back and see what happens. You're getting paid anyway, either way, baby. Just sit out. I also just feel like a way of like, if you're, especially if these contracts stay 7 or 8 years, you know, I don't think we're going to see 8 years or 10 years much. Well, who knows? But in terms of I feel like resting these assets seems like something that's going to become more important, and that's why depth is so important and making sure your 25th man is decent and all that kind of stuff. But there's got to be a way to, I don't know if it prevents injury, but maybe just to sustain some degree of effectiveness going forward, that rest is going to, it kind of already is, you know, you always hear the manager say, I'm going to give this guy a day, this or that, but I'm also thinking radically, like, this guy's just going to sit for a couple weeks because he's going to sit. So, I don't know. I'm a kooky guy. I don't know why guys coming back from Tommy John don't just start their seasons later. Why Matt Harvey didn't just start later, or Steven Strasburg didn't just start later and then join the team at some point so that then he was available late, so that they're available later in the season. Stuff like that.
Yeah, the pitch, the inning count guys, it is a weird, you know, prioritization, or you know, get them on the field as soon as, you know, on their normal schedule, but nothing else about the way that they're going about their season is normal. So why are you pretending that needs to be normal? Why can't you arrange it a different way?
Right, and everyone talks about the grind of the season, which is, you know, it's real. you do anything, you know, that monotonous or just that sort of rhythm, it's going to wear you down. It's just like that's going to affect them at some point. And what you're like, no, he has to feel the grind of the fourth or fifth month. He can't feel the grind in the third month. Then he's not a real team player. I just don't know where that comes from. Do you plan on making it to many games this year? Do you tend to go a lot?
Probably my normal amount, which is like 3, maybe 4. A lot of it winds up depending on when the A's are in town. That's when I try to prioritize, going. But I've never been like the game in person doesn't do a lot for me. I like being in the stadium for a while. I like, hanging out with people. But if I'm going to I saw a Sonny Gray game at Dodger Stadium last year. I think you were there, right? And I don't remember a thing about it. I have no idea what happened in that game. I have no idea. I think Sonny Gray pitched well. But I think I remember that from like the box score afterward, not watching him.
I just remember that the guy 2 rows up was somehow blocked from seeing things when I was just sitting regularly. That's what I remember from that game. So that was kind of annoying, that I was just sitting regularly and somehow blocking a grown man. And I'm short, folks. So there was very difficult that I, it was very odd that I was somehow able to do that. But yes, that's all I remember from that game. You're right. Don't go to baseball game, folks. You have no object permanence or something. I don't know.
Just read the stats off spreadsheet.
That's
we're
right.
Telling you right now.
That's right. And the post-game recaps on the Covey Chronicles.
Second to none.
Yes, lots of fine quality content there.
So as an A's fan, how are you feeling? How bad are you feeling about the Josh Donaldson trade right now?
Okay, so here's the hope. The hope, I'm pretty convinced Franklin Barreto is going to be a Hall of Fame player. That's where I'm going.
Just
no,
you watch.
I think once a decade, Billy Beane gets makes a move based on just really hating a guy. The one from last decade was Jeremy Giambi. He had like a 390 on base percentage, terrible defender, but a 390 on base percentage, which even in the era was quite good, and traded him for John Mabry in the middle of a playoff hunt. We all saw Moneyball and Dancing on the Table and whatnot, later got caught with, got caught with weed in an airport, which is just... that's more dumb than like bad character. I don't think anybody particularly cares, but it's just like, why did you, wrap it up in foil and take it into the airport? That seems like a dumb idea. I kind of put this on the same level, except magnified by about 100, because Donaldson, has spent 3 years as an MVP quality player, plays good defense at an important position. I'm not sure what happened. I'm not sure. Nobody thought Nolan was an ace. Nobody thought Graveman was an ace. Everybody knew the question marks around Laurie. I don't really understand, what the malfunction was in the process there. It's honestly more baffling to me at this point than it is frustrating. I just genuinely don't understand what happened.
It sounds like a clash of egos, like what you said, just out of pure spite. I mean, that's the only logical thing. I mean, that someone was irrational in that exchange. That's the most logical thing to me. The A's probably not going to compete as well, even with Donaldson on the team. But then again, that's that opportunity of you have an amazing player and you never know. But certainly if you get rid of that amazing player, you kind of pretty well know how things are going to go.
Well, and they were trying to compete last year. You know, it didn't work as well without Donaldson.
Right.
You know, in the Samardzija trade, they went for Marcus Semien, not, you know, sort of young 20-year-olds down in A-ball. Or even getting Laurie in the Donaldson trade. You know, it's possible. I mean, maybe the Blue Jays wanted to do that, but, you know, getting major league ready players, and Graveman and Nolan were also sort of major league ready types rather than, you know, wish upon a star type. So, they were trying to kind of rebuild in place in a way. But you know, Donaldson had multiple years of team control, et cetera, et cetera. So you could rebuild in place with him. Maybe you can't afford him and Samardzija, but it's sort of hard to believe that they couldn't afford, one of them. It really does smell like the name calling, the report that Donaldson called him Billy Boy or whatever, which is a Donaldson level insult. You know, I love him as a player, but he does seem like a little bit of, and this is someone who just spent the year watching Brett Laurie. Donaldson seems like a bit of an empty headed doink.
Also, what if that's like the Marty McFly "Don't call me chicken" for Billy Bean? It's like, just he could have called me anything else, but Billy Boy is just that. That's the switch gets flipped for as soon as you do that. Who knows? I remember what I was going to say. It wasn't a question, but it was, I am going to be seeing one game for sure this year, and that is Star Trek Night at AT&T Park. September 16th, folks. It's the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, and there's going to be some hella nerdy stuff going down. I'm sure of it, and I can't wait, and I hope my favorite Giants make fun of me for loving Star Trek in their stadium. That's the only thing that that will make it extra special. I like that
you're committed to this despite surviving Star Wars Night at Angel Stadium last year.
Oh my God! I had buried that. Tug. So at Star Wars Night, they started to show the trailer, and then they cut to the rally monkey. It was the worst thing ever. We were all there. We were furious. Right, it was like the first 30 seconds of the trailer, and then like as soon as the
yeah,
music
not
swells,
even. I think it
yeah.
was like, you know, yeah, they like had the whatever, the ship in the sand. I haven't seen the movie, the ship in the sand or whatever, and then you're like, oh, neat, the trailer, and then here comes the rally monkey. They also inserted the rally monkey into the scene where I think Luke gets dumped into the, you know, the sand underneath the. There's a lot of sand in these movies, right? And then the big worm thing comes out. I don't know. And the rally monkey was the. You have any idea what I mean? No.
I don't know what the Star Wars kids are into. I don't know what the names of the Star Wars things are. So some creature that some people have fetishized over for like 30 years came out in the. Yes,
that's yes. about right.
This is coming from a Star Trek fan. I'm such a hypocrite, folks. So this is the point in the podcast where we answer questions from Twitter, which have been remarkably tame through our 16 weeks of doing this show. I feel they've been very tame. Doug, do you have any of those questions?
I do. So all the right. First one is from Kizar Soze, as always.
Long time listener and asker, yes.
Asking, what food do stadiums need that they either fail at or don't currently provide?
Okay, so I hear that question as, what do they need to improve on if it's a staple? And then what do they need to get? Then, like, what should they have? That's how I'm hearing the question, right?
Yeah, so, like, if it's bad, like, what good food should there be that's not there? So, like, if a stadium has sushi but it's bad, you'd say, well, they need good sushi. If they don't have sushi, you could still say sushi.
To the sushi point, I say no baseball stadium, no sports stadium should have sushi whatsoever. And that is my hard and fast rule there.
I think it would be acceptable at, like, you know, water polo.
If it was, like, ocean adjacent?
Well, just, it's thematic. It's thematic.
You're talking about that. Yes, I arrived at that point just a beat too late. Yes, okay, so, yes, you're talking thematic, I'm talking quality, and that's essentially like getting sushi at a gas station. So, a sports arena, I wouldn't necessarily go with that. But, all right, you're a theme guy. All right. Are there any foods or – I don't know how many baseball stadiums you've been to, but have there been any that have just dropped the ball on food quality?
I mean, I'm never impressed with Dodger Stadium's offerings. Like, considering it's L.A., it doesn't seem – like, it just seems sort of boring. You know, they have all the basics and none of them all that good. I want better pretzels out in the world. That's what I want.
That is it. I agree. There should be better pretzels at all the stadiums. But they buy them, like, at the beginning of the month, and that's it. So that's the problem there.
And half of them are bad. So, like, if you're not in the first group of people to get the pretzel, you're getting one of those big, like, hard ones, and you sort of dip it in the mustard, and you think, I'm going to eat this, but I'm mad.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't toss it away or anything. I mean, you're committed to it. You can always just, like, lick off the salt in any event.
The Angels Stadium food is also pretty bad. It's also pretty forgettable, mainly. But one of those, Dodgers or Angels, I remember the pretzel I had there, the moisture in my mouth, the moisture in the air, and the moisture in the mustard just evaporated with each bite. And it just dried. It just dried. It was like I was chewing on Vonnegut's Ice 9. Just all the moisture was leaving, just going away. That's all I remember. So okay, but this is a consensus. There should be better pretzels at baseball games.
Yeah,
they could, and just think of the possibilities. Then they could have pretzeled hot dog buns if they actually had good pretzels. And by the way, Dodger Stadium Dodger dogs are very overrated.
Yeah, I don't really understand what makes them Dodger dogs as opposed to they're still the same sort of mushy, like, really odd consistency considering they're supposed to be meat items that, I don't know what makes them Dodgery.
They're bigger than an average dog. That's my Seinfeld attempting to explain that.
Oh, I thought that was a Vin Scully impression.
My Vin Scully is... They're bigger than an average dog. Let's go back to this one.
That's my that's not bad. I don't know that I could tell the difference between the two, but I'm going to say they're both pretty good.
Well, you would tell
the Seinfeld was louder. That was really the big difference.
Yeah.
I did put one higher registered, attempted anyway. But Vince Scully would be like, you'd have to go all the way back to the petting zoo where the goat and the cat and the stray dog became friends and then were captured and processed as meat. And now you're enjoying them in the stands of Farmer John's Dodger dog. That would be the Vince Scully pitch. All right, next question.
All right, this one comes from @LarsTheWanderer asking, since we're talking about Dodger Stadium, how long will the reanimated corpse of Larry King be allowed to haunt Dodger Stadium?
Well, he's a season ticket holder as long as he pays his deposit. So,
they might price him out at some point. I suppose that's possible.
Oh, you think they'd price out LK?
I think it is entirely possible that Dodger Stadium could be a billionaires only sort of location within the next 20 years.
Well, to appropriate some Andrew Friedmanese, what's the positive arbitrage of cutting ties with Larry King and Mary Hart? That's a question for you, Andrew Friedman. You can answer. Answer me on the Twitter, on email. What my favorite Larry King news of the day, first of all, we all know about how he tweets, right? Everybody on this dais knows about how Larry King tweets.
Yeah, better than everyone else?
No. How he actually inputs the tweets in so that they're put up on Twitter.
No, I don't either.
Just to recap, if you don't know how Larry King tweets, there was an article, I believe, in the New York Times that actually says he calls his assistant. He has a hotline that he calls into, and he speaks the tweet into it, and I assume with the hashtag onto it. Then his assistant goes to the hotline, listens to it, and then types it in and posts it to Twitter. That is how Larry King tweets in 2016.
So actually, I think the answer better than everyone else holds.
Yeah, no. I think he does. I think he's got a fine tweet catalog. I think he's great. But my favorite Larry King story currently is, I don't know if you folks are out there are watching the American Crime Story show on FX. About the OJ show basically, and they have the last two episodes. Larry King has played himself, so it's current 2016 alien looking Larry King, made up to look like 1994 Larry King, and it's hilarious because he looks like current day Larry King with just like a, they put drew a marker on his hair to make it darker. That's it. And he's got like his old man hunch now, and you know, his voice is what it is, and it's just funny to me. I'm like, they could have actually used the footage of old Larry King, like the old. They use all the other archival footage, but I guess it's just like, well, we can get Larry King. Why don't we just get Larry King? But there's a nostalgia, and then there's insanity, and I think this is closer to that.
So. I'm not watching it yet, but that seems. I mean, everybody else is an actor. It's not like OJ's in it,
right?
You know, and it's not like, you know, you got Schwimmer and you got Travolta and you got the whole crew there, and then you got actual Larry King. Like, I don't know. That seems very. It seems like it would create dissonance. Did it create dissonance?
I believe the fact that I'm talking about it and expressing exasperation. Yes. all right. What else have we got on the old question box there?
All right. We had a similar question last week, but we'll just go ahead with it anyway.
It's our show now.
It's our show now. We're going to again call it Date, Marry, Ditch for Kershaw, Puig, and Adrian Gonzalez.
Again with the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Kershaw, Puig, and Gonzalez.
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to marry Kershaw, right? Does that seem like a given?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think, no? Uh-oh. What's the yeah.
Oh? Oh, I think you gotta date Kershaw.
Really?
You gonna marry Puig?
No, I'm gonna marry Adrian. I'm gonna marry steady Adrian Gonzalez. He's steady. I know what I'm getting.
Boring.
Yeah, he's boring. And Kershaw's just as boring. I'm just as steady. He's just steady at such a higher level. Plus, he's got his bro crew that he celebrates the Cy Young with every year. You know, he's got his E, and he's got his turtle. And like, don't you want those dudes in your life?
No,
you don't get him. All you're doing is dating him.
Here are the concerns with marrying Kershaw for those very reasons. One of those guys clearly look like the killer from The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. So I don't want some sort of ill fate to befall me just by hanging out with them. And two, what happens when any Cardinals roll up? Or we, like, go to Missouri for some reason? It's just going to be a mess. He's not going to know what to do, and it's just going to be bad. So I'm not.
Why would you go to Missouri? That's
you
really
just don't
your
go
own
to
call.
Missouri. This is the very easy answer.
What if one of the bros are like, you got to come here. I've got
of
a condo
all people,
in the Arch.
The bros of all people know not to take Kershaw to Missouri.
But I definitely am ditching Puig.
Oh, I got to ditch Gonzalez. He's the most dad. No, that's the thing. He's not even the most dad. Like, normally we say, oh, this guy's the most dad. He's so dad, whatever. Gonzalez is the most stepdad guy in the league. And like just that goatee and the way he tries to act all tough, like, and even though with that goatee he's trying to act tough, and you know that he wears the Michael Jordan jeans, and just like there's no way that Adrian Gonzalez can be involved in my life at all.
He owns a motorcycle, but he only takes it out on Sunday afternoons.
Yeah, and it, you know, he makes sure to go to speed limit on it. Wears the safest possible helmet, not the one that actually makes you look cool.
I love that he's a stepdad.
it's really just the, you know, it describes him. He is. Puig, you know, Puig would you'd get to ride around in this car for a while. You know, it would be a nice date. It would be a nice time.
I think I picked him for date last weekend, but I don't remember what the other choices were.
I remember we all married Lincecum, but I don't remember who the third choice was.
Yeah, I don't remember either. Someone will go back and listen, I hope. I don't know. So. all right. Yeah. So that's the last thing we do for every show, Jason, because I know you're an avid listener, is we usually end on some sort of absurd game that I come up with at the last minute, or sometimes I think about well in advance, and then those are usually the worst ones. But this is probably a bad short notice one, so you've come at a good week. So this week's game is called SCOTUS or POTUS. As you know, there's a vacancy on the Supreme Court, and as you know, we are currently in the midst of election season. Well, let's pick a giant. One of us throws a giant out there, and then the other two can pick what they would be best suited for, what they should be campaigning to be. Let's just assume that they are just quitting baseball because they have an opportunity to either be a front runner in the GOP, or it doesn't have to be a party. Just to say POTUS or SCOTUS. And then if you want to pitch their platform or how they might win, how about, Doug, you throw out the first one, Jason and I will have at it.
Okay. Denard Spann.
Denard Spann. He is a giant. I have to remember that.
Yeah, you're looking at the same roster I am.
So Denard Spann, he was in the American League at one point, so you should know who he is, Jason.
Yeah, but he was in the National League last year, so I forgot he existed.
I think. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. You go, because I wasn't gonna. I was just gonna stall for time.
I think he run. Denard Spann clearly to me is a strong candidate for the office of President of the United States of America, and I think his platform would be renewal and comebacks, because that is what he's all about right now. He's going to prove that he has somehow done what few people do and overcome a hip injury to become again an elite level baseball player, and I think that's going to be his platform of like America has a hip injury and a hip issue right now, but I'm going to make us hip again. And I think that's his campaign slogan. Make America hip again. And it's going
to
be denied.
So that's probably not going to be on a hat, but is he going to have it like on a pair of pants?
Or like a WWE championship belt, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
So that's Denard Spann's POTUS.
So I won't be the person to note that there are only three giants who are even eligible to be president, age-wise.
Which, to be fair,
two of whom were not born in the U.S. All three of whom. I'm sorry. There are four, three of whom were not born in the U.S. So the only actual possible president here is Jake Peavy. But I think he can still run because, as we all know, Ted Cruz is also not eligible because he is, in fact, the Zodiac Killer. So that is Article 6, Section 4 of the Constitution bans the Zodiac Killer from being or even running for president. So that all the noise about Trump potentially suing him to prevent him becoming president, I think there's a good chance that he might win on those grounds.
I think Trump v. Zodiac Killer would definitely be used. Thousands of articles would be written about Trump v. Zodiac.
But I think Spann for president is would be a solid idea. You know, he's got sort of bicoastal kind of cred. He's got the middle America. He's covered all of America in his career. You know, Minnesota, Washington, and now San Francisco. Very few politicians can compete with that kind of geography spanning experience without being, you know, nobody's ever dared to call him a carpetbagger. So I think the fact that it hasn't happened yet is really bodes well for his campaign. So yeah, I think he needs to. I mean, he's going to have to. The fundraising is going to be tough, so he needs to get out there sooner rather than later.
Well, Scott Boras, being his campaign manager, I think would certainly give him a leg up or help him catch up with everybody else quickly.
But I think it's a good point. He balances his own ticket, so that's important.
One thing you bring up a great point about the age eligibility. If we had played this game 10 years ago, we would have been hard pressed to find a giant not eligible on that roster. So, oh, how times have changed. All right, Jason, who do you have?
Let's do Brandon Belt.
To me, Belt's SCOTUS because I think he gets through the nomination process because you would have people putting him up going like, but he's enjoyable and funny and he seems to be sharper than he looks. So that'll help with like the can I have a beer with him, whatever senators are going to be judging him based on that. And then I think that the fact that he's got a ceiling of some kind is why he would get nominated by the current president. So I'm going to say SCOTUS. And I think he's going to be like, Brandon Belt, just he tries his best. That's the selling point. He tries his darndest. And he could be good.
Yeah, I think SCOTUS because I think he's an inquisitive person. So when he gets on the bench, he'll just ask questions of the lawyers all day long. And they won't even necessarily be relevant to the case. He'll be like, "So, what's your favorite meal at Olive Garden? You like the breadsticks? You like the soup? What do you like?" It'll just be that for his entire speaking time. He'll like nudge Clarence Thomas, be like, "I can ask your questions, right?" And Thomas is like, "Yeah."
I like the idea that all of his hypotheticals or his questions related to the case are all Olive Garden based.
Right.
That would be better. You know, someone brings in a suit, and so he's like, "So you're telling me that in the scenario where I go to Olive Garden, that was the starting point."
He does have more experience than anybody else on the Giants of being on the bench when he really shouldn't be.
So he just picked things up through that. All right. Oh, so Doug, you agree? So we're done.
Yeah, right. I think so.
All right, well then, I'm going to throw out one I feel is an easy one. It's Jake Peavy. Yeah, and since I'm just stealing that whole cloth from Jason because you reminded me he was on the team. So.
I'm gonna say SCOTUS because I know he's eligible for the presidency, but he doesn't strike me as someone who wants to be president that badly. He strikes me as like more of a team player. And I think, you know, he wants to confer with the other justices and come together and sort of figure out what the verdict is. And then he wants to play some sweet tunes on his guitar. And I think that'll be a good day for him.
I think I have to disagree. I think I have to go POTUS on this one because he just seems too greasy to spend all day in a black robe. I think he's got to have the freedom to put on that trucker cap and a filthy shirt. And I don't think the black robe is going to be flattering for what I assume is the dandruff situation. So I think he's got to be POTUS and I think he's got to stick with a lot of khaki suits.
I must say that his long hair looks pretty cool now that he's grown it out. But I would say that's your most slanderous statement of any giant is saying that he has dandruff. I was going to say, this is the punchline here, but he's got to be a SCOTUS because Justice is blind, and so is Jake Peavy. And that was was the reason why. It's the whole reason why I brought him up. So, all right. Well, okay. So, Jason, you are a master of many things, but is there anything you want to plug especially?
I guess buy the Baseball Prospectus Annual. It's out. Get it now before the season starts, because once the season starts, you won't really feel like reading it anymore. That's my experience. That's a pretty shitty plug, I guess. But I always, when I was just a reader, I always tried to read it, before spring training ended, because I sort of put it on my shelf after that. Sam Miller co-edited, and Patrick Dubuque of Lookout Landing and various other places. It is production quality took a step back up this year. The concerns of last year were listened to. It is the font is actually readable. The paper is nice, and the jokes are adequate. The jokes I wrote are adequate. The jokes everybody else wrote are fantastic. It is in the $15 to $18 range at Amazon. It will probably be at your house sort of immediately if you order it. And I like it, and I think everybody else will as well.
All right, and you're still writing for the Sweet Spot blog on ESPN.
It's not really a sweet spot. I don't. It's not clear to me that the sweet spot still exists. I don't think it does. It kind of went away in the redesign of the ESPN website, but I do still technically have beanball.org.
Yes.
Spelled like Billy. Hopefully we'll have somewhat regular writing there this season. So, yeah.
And ESPN still exists, right? I'm not sure.
I haven't been in a while.
Yeah.
So I can't confirm or deny.
All right, and you're on Twitter, and how can
I am
find
on
you
Twitter.
There? Yeah. How can
That's
they
probably
find you?
Probably my main outlet, JLWOJ on Twitter.
And you should definitely give him a follow if you're not already. You should get on that. And as you know, I'm at Every 6 Day, but maybe you forget or you're new to the show. Doug?
I am at Moonwalk McFly.
And we thank you very much for listening. Jason, thanks again for joining us. We hope to have you back when the A's and Giants are playing each other, and the Giants are 10 games in last place, and the A's are 20 games in first. So, yeah. Thanks for joining
us. Okay, so you're not having me back is what you're saying.
I'm just saying that the standings won't be what I just pitched them out to be. All right. Thanks again,
thank you.
Guys. Have a good night.